Come on, Stephen A. It's you, El Chapo. You running the media cartel, my boy? John Gotti? Come on, man. Talking about be careful.
He was pissed.
This is Rich and Ken with Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It is 93.7 WEEI. Live from Fenway Park in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and employee pricing for all. You pay what we pay for, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball and that dirty water. Me, I'm Rich Shurtenlieb. Right there is Ken Laird. Ooh. And to my left, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. And a beautiful day out here at Fenway. A ton of metalheads walking down the street. There is a techno metal band called Electric Callboy playing, and the amount of heavy black jackets and leather I have seen on a day that I think is supposed to hit 83.
Playing a part, huh?
They're playing.
You can't take a day off from that. You got to just totally, if you're going to go all the way. Right?
You wear the leather on the bike this time of year, Ted?
I do sleeveless.
Oh, hell yeah.
The leather vest is my choice when it's this hot. So yeah, you have to be very, very you got to make sure you are dressed right for the bike. If you're not, it's not fun. But when it's a day like this, sleeveless leather vest is the way to go.
Oh hell yeah! There was one time he came into work and he had the sleeveless shirt, and it is something. Like, you're just like, whoa, you are a biker, sir.
I'll do that next month.
Well, I want Ted with the tarps off in the outfield here at Fenway. That's what I want, by himself, just run roaming the stands.
Was that a 1 week trend? Like, is that dead now?
Yeah, it was last night. They brought it back. It didn't work, but you know
what? I didn't even see it last night.
Yeah, they tried.
It hasn't worked. Right? I mean, that's
0-2.
Okay. Well, maybe I need to be the the change up.
Bring it back. Exactly.
Wouldn't that suck if they kept the one time you did it, they won, and everyone just wanted you to keep coming back? You're like, damn it,
dude,
I got to do it
that
again.
Would suck. But you know what? I have geared down on our shows before, though. So
yeah.
I've taken the shirt off.
That is true.
When asked. So yeah. I am not, beneath doing something.
if they go on a streak, maybe Chad Tracy could make a special request. And by the way, Chad Tracy in studio today at 3:15, which is great because the first time that Ken interviewed him, he insulted him instantly.
I did. We had a really awkward exchange at Worcester. So I covered his dad, Jim Tracy, in Pittsburgh. And at the end of his, he's really good with the media, by the way.
He seems like a good dude.
The team is not doing well, and he's under 500, but I think he's done a pretty good job. Maybe not a Vrabel job, we'll get to that, but pretty good job handling the media. But after he was done, I was like, oh, hey, Chad, I covered your dad in Pittsburgh. Those teams were really horrible. I mean, they lost like 100 games. And then he kind of just stared at me, and I was like, but your dad was awesome. Like, he really handled that well.
Were you expecting a different response?
It didn't come out right.
Okay.
You know those teams that your dad was responsible for the success of? Yeah, they stunk.
But it wasn't his fault. I mean, the team was as bad as this Red Sox run.
That is the thing that really just is going to always jump out is with those teams. With his dad being the manager, is that they sucked.
But when he took over for Colorado, they went on a run, which we asked Chad about a couple weeks ago when he first joined us.
And sure.
You were hoping for that kind of magic, the Don Mattingly Phillies magic.
That's working, huh?
The Tortorella Vegas magic where you get a guy in and boom, you take off. It's unbelievable what's happening with Vegas and their hockey team.
But how does it feel to be Bruce, man? You got fired and all of a sudden your team looks indestructible.
That's crazy.
That is really, really a strange.
Crazy how
they're like 19-4 since that firing?
Since that firing.
Oh, that just sucks. You know what? Bruce is one of those guys that apparently, he shows up to a place, rights the ship, everyone's buying into what he's selling, but he's got like an expiration date where players turn on him, doesn't he?
Yep.
It seems that each of the places that he was a coach, it's like it goes from, wow, this dude's really got everyone buying into his message. And what is it, 3 years? About 3 years later, everyone's like, get this guy out of here.
Yeah. I mean, it was just 2 years ago. He's got the cup. He's bringing the Stanley Cup around here, flaunting it and shaking his ass around everything. it is. The NHL coaching carousel is a short-lived kind of profession, but
oh yeah,
because that sport, unlike others, is such a game of passion and emotion. It feels like just one change like that can make a difference, whereas baseball if you don't have a hitter in the middle of the lineup, no matter who's in there, you're going to suck.
He has, however, a great career ahead of him on TV. I've seen him do some stuff like since he was fired, and he's excellent.
For 3 years.
That route.
What's that? Nope.
Just go to TV.
Hell yeah. And that's like Tomlin. Like, Tomlin's going to be really good. I'm assuming he's going to be really good on TV. The dude seems like he's, you know, he's always like interesting with the media. My God, my son like clips a bunch of memes of him at his press conference.
He's going to have to shorten his answers down, though. Yeah, I mean, he can go on like these long soliloquies where he just keeps going and going and going and analogies. And, you know, so TV, you got to kind of get in and get out quick.
Yep.
Can we later address Tom Brady getting passed over for the Emmy by Greg Olson, the number two on the broadcast, and how humiliating that is?
Oh, I didn't even hear about that.
So Greg Olson, the number two on the Fox team, won the sports Emmy for color guy of the year or whatever.
Greg Olson's better.
He totally is better. And how do you justify having him on your number two team?
Then why the F not?
Because Tom brings more eyes. Like, Tom is a bigger star. Yeah, like, that's how you justify it. But Greg is better at his job. Now, will Tom Brady get to the point one day where he's, you know, feels a little more relaxed and isn't as uptight and noncommittal as to what team he's going to be rooting for in the Super Bowl? Who the hell knows? But I do know that Greg Olson got screwed. He got screwed, but that's show business. You got a name like Tom Brady, it's not like you're going to put him on the number two team.
Well, he should hold out now, like Gonzalez. Just let's go. Bidding war.
I mean, he's worth it. He's worth every penny. I mean, the thing is, he's likable and he's knowledgeable. And those are two things that I want in my broadcasters, and he's got it. I mean, he teaches me something every time I watch. I'll be honest, Tom could teach us so much, and I feel like he just holds back.
It's true. It's true.
He doesn't give you everything.
I mean, I've said it before. The guy is literally the smartest player to ever play the game. He probably knows more about football than almost all the coach, maybe all the coaches that are out there, about the modern game. Yep. He's won at the highest levels multiple times. That one time, remember, he said, "I know the answers to the test." Mm-hmm. Did anybody go, "Oh, he's full of himself"? No, I went, "Yeah,
yeah.
He knows the answers to the test." And so all he had to do is, when he got in the booth, just say exactly what he sees. But he has been holding back lately. And it's right, Ted. It's like, I'm not learning a ton when he's in the booth like I do with Greg Olson. But that's going to change. I think he'll get more comfortable.
I think you will. I mean, I think, you know, he could give great anecdotes. He could tell you, oh, this, when we were in this game, this situation. But he doesn't, you know, and he could just give us so much more. And I don't know why he's – look, when I went right into the media when I retired, and it was weird. It was strange to cover guys that I knew, that I was friends with, that I played against. But you just didn't want to say anything critically. And
yeah, not anymore. You're just ripping guys left and right.
Are you kidding me? I have no. Yeah. You know what? And I sleep better at night. You know? You talk to this guy, you talk to that guy. I'm like, I'm better off not talking to those guys so I can just say whatever the hell I want.
You know? We did have a scene last year, though, where you and Vrabel, first meeting, you guys dapped it up and gave it a little man hug. And it was like, I brought a little tear to my eye. I was like, oh, Teddy's back with Mike. You know?
Oh, it felt good.
You interviewed him, you know?
Yep. It was good. I was softball pitching too, man. I gave easy ones. So, it's not easy. I get it. But the more Tom gets distance from, you know, retiring from the game, you know, which he's been out for a few years, he will get probably better at his job.
And you can tell which ones immediately have that. The cold feet, like Drew Brees was like that. Drew Brees was afraid to say anything critical about anyone, and he didn't last very long when he went in there. But then there's guys who can't wait to talk trash on people, like Kendrick Perkins. Like, Kendrick Perkins just came out. I mean, remember when he was just like a once-a-week guest on ESPN, but he was so freaking good at calling people out that they just kept bringing him back.
Right.
And
calling Scal out left and right these days.
Well,
he just got into a fight at an AAU game. I just saw the footage of that. Perk's like going after some kid's father. It's a crazy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I would not want to be on the other side of a Perk fight. Do you think, like, Perk could still kick somebody's ass?
Oh,
I guess
yeah.
He is.
Yeah. He's from Beaumont, Texas. If you don't know Beaumont, I mean, it's not the, you know, easiest place to grow up. So he's got a little country, little street in him, you know? So I would not mess with Perk, man.
I would just, like, run around the gym and wear him out after the first lap. Like, that's the one thing I'll say about Perk. Perk's one of those dudes. He's like, who is the big fat guy in the UFC who just hardly even worked out, and then he would just do one punch and knock you out? Like, that's what I think Perk is like. But you could just
Uggy Bear
run away from the guy. I don't think his cardio is where it needs to be.
Probably not. But that, the length, the reach is...
Yes.
If he just gets you on one... One shot, you're dead.
Yep, without a question. All right, well, we have a ton to talk about today. And Mike Vrabel indeed spoke for the first time. And you know what? Maybe we'll just take one call because I want to get deep into this Vrabel stuff. Let's first get to Jay. Jay, what's happening? Jay, what's up, man?
Hey, Jay.
Hey, guys. You guys might think I'm crazy. I mean, that's what my psychiatrist says about me, but that's another story. I was thinking the change of the format of the football. I love the format of hockey in which the two final teams are the absolute best teams playing. You couldn't do best of seven with football, but what about best of three? It sure as hell would generate income.
And oh, God, like a Super Bowl that was three games? I mean, listen, Ted, I just...
It was a crazy idea. I'm sorry. I'll pass.
There's more money in it, the NFL considered.
Yeah, I mean, what makes, I think, the NFL so must-watch is the fact that it's one and done.
Yep.
That there's so much at stake in those games that, you know, it's... You know, loser goes home. And so I just think that the whole essence of what makes watching NFL playoff games so exciting and
it's
fun.
It's the perfect product. God, we can't ruin the NFL. What are we doing?
I know, Jay.
It's the one thing that we got right.
Nope. Yeah. You know what? That wouldn't go over. I can't imagine that would be even – at best, two out of three. Nope. Hell no. No.
No, just it's any given Sunday. It's like, you know, it's just how you prepare for that team. You got one shot to do it.
Don't you think at the end of the day, the best teams still win it at the end?
Sure. I mean, there's sometimes where the sunshine, you know, shines on a dog's ass where you just can't believe what just happened. I'll give you the Brock Osweiler game against the Patriots where you're just like, how the F did that? That happened.
Yeah. Well, New York Giants in the perfect season.
There you go.
Were they the best team, or was that just any given Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I don't know. It's tough because they went toe to toe with the Patriots in the last regular season game.
They did, and so, they did well. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's a team that even though their record was, I think they were 9-8. I think they had 9 wins to get in. They were getting better as the season went on. So I it's hard for me to say that team specifically, but like I don't know, the Buffalo Bills this year could be like, we were the best team in the AFC, but you know, Josh Allen threw 5 interceptions.
Yeah,
you know, that day, and so that day they weren't the better team. Denver was and beat them, but you, every now and then, you know, a team might get through that shouldn't. But I think at the end of the day, in the NFL, the team that's holding Lombardi at the end of the day is the most deserving team.
That perfect season, Giants, is an amazing experiment on the pressure that you feel to finish a perfect season. Because I've spoken to several players who are on that Patriots team. And they were like, you know, I kind of wish we had lost a game at some point in the season because it's all everyone talked about going into it. And you already have the pressure of trying to win a Super Bowl, which is the ultimate pressure. But on top of that, there's this, you're going to be the all-time greatest team that has ever walked the planet.
It would have been, too. Oh.
It would have been. But
instead, the 72 Dolphins still celebrating.
Oh, God, Mercury.
No one would ever talk about them again. No one.
You're right.
Because they had, what, it was 12-game season, right? So, obviously, a lot different now with 16 games. But it would have put them in a class that nobody would ever touch that team.
I know. And it was such an unbelievable team to watch. But I think I've spoken to about 3 different players from that, and they all say the same thing, is they wish they would have lost just one game and the pressure would have been off.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. Are we want to go and roll? Ready to roll? Take a break? Okay. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Chad Tracy, your interim manager of the Boston Red Sox, will join us. Is this Eric Church? It is?
It is.
How about that? We were just talking off the air with Red Sox interim manager Chad Tracy about what he likes to listen to, and he goes, Eric Church Radio, baby. Grew up in Florida. You know, you got to like country music. Spend some time down there. But we have with us in studio, it is 93.7 WEEI, Rich, Ken, 3-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson, and in studio right now, Chad Tracy, is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Chad, by the way, this is the first time I believe Ted and I have met you, but Ken right there, I hope you don't have any PTSD, because he told me that he interviewed you with the Woo Sox and accidentally started things off by... How did you do it?
It was after his media session, and I said to Chad, I covered your dad in Pittsburgh, and boy, those teams were horrible, or something like that. We had an awkward exchange.
Chad couldn't remember, you know.
No, and you gave me a look.
So he immediately insulted. Like
I didn't mean it that way.
But it came out that way. Chad, tell me you took it that way. I would take it.
I don't actually remember you saying
that. Oh, there you go.
You're so insignificant.
Perfect. Yeah.
Well, Chad, okay, so let's just start off by saying, at least you guys are hitting lately. So that's nice. I mean, obviously the team is a little, they're snake bitten at home, and the record isn't great, but when you see some of the forward movement with the offense and you still just can't get over that hump, does any of that give you any kind of hope? I know you want the wins and I know you want the W's, right, but at least there's some sort of step offensively that looks like you're going in the right direction.
I think that's well said. Yeah. I mean, you got to win games. Like, everybody knows that, coaches know that, players know that. So there is no moral victories, but there is, in a sense, when you're playing 162 game schedule and the American League is not performing as a whole, and you feel like, you know, as we've gone along in the month I've been here, like, you know, hey, our offense needs to be better. Mm-hmm. And you feel pretty strong that your pitching is going to be good, you know, that even if it has a blip here and there. So to see us scoring runs, like, you know, consistently, you know, getting, you know, 4, 5, 6 runs at least over the last couple of weeks, as a group, in a baseball sense, you look at that and say, if we can continue this for a long stretch of time, we like our chances, you know?
Yeah.
That being said, it's happened to come at a time when we were enough games under 500 where we realized we have a lot of work to do as well.
Can you read anything into it being Fenway where you guys seem to be snake bit most of all?
No, other than just the results of the games this week, you know, where you feel like, you know, maybe you get a lead and you didn't hold it, you know, like, mm-hmm. And then you're trailing and you make a vicious comeback like we have 3 out of the last 4 nights and it comes up just short. And so, yeah, that can make you feel snake bitten and make you feel like that sense of like, man, nothing's going right. But at the same time, like there are still a lot of good things happening that weren't before.
Yeah.
And you have to look at it that way. But, you know, no question, like, you know, there's a lot of things we have to do better. We have to win games. Like, and the biggest one and the most telling one is like, we got to win games at home.
Yeah.
You know, and that changes the whole dynamic. So we get all that. But how do you do that? Like, take the pitching and the offense and put them together for a stretch of time. Mm-hmm. That's how teams go on runs where you say, hey, man, they won 12 out of the last 15.
Yeah.
That's how that happens. You take the pitching that's been good at times, you take the offense, which looks better, and you put those together. And if you have one of those runs, everybody looks up and goes, man, like they're kind of right in it, or they're in the second wild cards, but whatever. That's how you have to look at it when you have 100 and whatever games left.
Chad, can you tell me, because there's been kind of conflicting reports, can you tell me exactly what's wrong with Roman Anthony's injury? Like what his actual injury is?
It's a strain in his tendon in his finger on the top of his hand. So it's basically just gives him discomfort with certain movements and the way he flexes his wrist to swing.
Okay.
So he was able to take some swings yesterday for the first time, which was good. It was progress over the last time he tried to swing, and it still was uncomfortable. So there's a lot of things he's able to do. Obviously, this is not related to his legs. He's able to keep his legs in order. He can shag. He can run. He can throw. Mm-hmm. This motion doesn't hurt it as much. So it's a waiting game is all it is, and I know that's tough, but the nature of the injury is it's you got to be able to swing. You got to be able to use your wrists and your hands to swing a baseball bat. So you're waiting for that discomfort to go away so then you can ratchet up the activity.
So would you consider his injury a matter of pain tolerance?
In a way, it can be described as that, but also no at the same time, because I could say as a player, like, there's maybe something that bothers you on a certain part of your body. I can handle that, but like, if I have to swing a bat for a living, and I have to go out in my job, especially Roman, like, everybody knows Roman has seen him last year, like, what this guy can do to help us, right?
Yeah.
Which is with a bat in his hand in the batter's box.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest attribute to help this team, and I can't do that with one hand.
Yeah.
You know, like, what you would be asking him to do is, like, you know, we got to be able to get him healthy. You know,
yeah.
Like, you want to take a guy that can give you his best of what that is and then say, but we only got 50% of that because one of his hands is not functioning properly. So,
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, in a sense, like, he's got to be able to be comfortable with it, but because of where it is,
yeah.
It's really hard to do that.
So that's a good way to describe it, because Ted being an ex-athlete, and we've spoken to athletes before, that, you know, when you hear that a player is dealing with pain tolerance and that's right. The thing that's wrong, you know, we have heard from athletes that, you know, it classifies an injury when it's pain tolerance. It paints the player as being soft if they don't return.
Right.
So, you know, and can you see how that clarification, you know, really helps out a player, like what you just said, that it's not just a pain tolerance thing. Because if you're Roman Anthony, you're like, oh, geez, man, you know, what are people thinking if they think it's just I'm not tough enough to get out there and play? But it seems that that's not the case. It affects the actual, like his actual performance.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think try to think of it like if you're an outfielder and your shoulder's barking a little bit. Well, you know, you might have to throw two balls during the game, and you throw the ball in and hit the cutoff man. Like that's different than this guy's impact is as a hitter, but one of his hands isn't working.
Yeah.
Like that's not, that's not an apples to apples thing.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. Like there are things that all athletes have, you know, pain and discomfort at different times during the year. And they say, I can grind through this because I know overall, like it's not going to affect, you know, the outcome of a game. Mm-hmm. But as a hitter of Roman's capability and what he's able to do, hey, we need you to hit without one of your hands. Like, you know, without, you know, full use, like that's not it. So like for us as an organization, like, yes, we want him to get healthy. Yes, we want him back.
Yeah.
But we're not looking like, oh, it's 50%. Like get out there. You know, like it's not easy to do that. So we want it to move along. Like I hope he gets better fast, and we're making improvements now, which is great.
Is he going to be sent down? Like to get some.
Oh, I would imagine so at this point, you know, like we haven't fully got into that yet. We'll start talking more about that as we get closer to feel like, hey, he's ready to go. But the amount of time he's missed, like it's probably fair to the kid. Like, let's go get some at bats and get our timing back.
Chad, how's the overall morale right now? Who are your dudes? Who are the guys that you've identified as maybe being kind of the flag carriers that, you know, picking guys up and kind of pulling guys through these, you know, times like right you're in right now?
Believe it or not, the morale's pretty good. Interestingly enough, like I feel like it's almost better now than it was 2 weeks ago when we were winning games, but finding a way to win them like 3-2 and just scratching out some wins. But because the bats have started to come to life a little bit, I feel the morale, and I think it's what we just talked about—the sense of the guys knowing, like in the long haul, if we found our rhythm offensively, we can hold on to that for a while. They feel pretty good about we'll have a run at some point. But to answer your question, all of them, like, you know, Wilson Contreras has been an amazing addition for us. Like he's been around the league for a long time and plays the game as hard as a veteran player as that you'll ever see. You know, that is huge for us, and we have, you know, Crochet and Ranger, all these guys, Sonny, when they're not pitching, they're the guys standing right on top of the dugout, rooting for the group to get it going. They know what it can mean if our offense gets going. So we have a really tight-knit group, and I think when you kind of watch what's going on, everybody's on the same page and feels like, you know, is our record what we want? Not even close. Like, it's not good enough. But I think everybody views it the same way, that, like, the team's capability, if we do some of the things we're talking about, like, you know, it could be a 2 week stretch where that changes dramatically, and you have to continue to look at it that way.
We're talking to Sox manager Chad Tracy, and one addition to the game that I love this year is the introduction of the ABS challenge system. I get irrationally excited when it's challenged. I know the people in the crowd too. It's like everyone leans forward and are they going to get this one right? It's quick, and it's truly added to, I think, the enjoyment of the game. However, when it comes to ABS challenges, the Red Sox, I just looked it up, they're unfortunately dead last. They are the only team as of this afternoon that has lost more challenges than they've won. I think it's a success rate of 48%.
Yeah.
Is that something you're discussing with the players? And is the team doing like any kind of teaching on when to challenge and what they should be doing?
Talk about it a lot, actually. Talked about it yesterday. Believe it or not, you guys know I've been in AAA for a long time. This stuff originated in AAA. I've been watching it for 4 years. Mm-hmm. 48% sounds terrible, and it's, you know, but even in AAA all the years they did it, like I think the average was like around 51. Mm-hmm. So like it's not a massive thing. Like, you know, it's usually just 50-50, slightly above. And we have numbers that we look at. I don't want to turn it into a math equation, but like per challenge that we get right, like our run value is actually pretty good. The problem is we're not challenging enough. We leave opportunities on the table. So our conversations with our players are not necessarily about missing one, because everybody misses half of them, like, you know, on average.
Yeah.
It's more about there are opportunities, even maybe in situations where there's nobody on base, where, you know, you want to use those and keep them around for big situations.
Yeah.
But there are certain egregious calls with nobody on. If you know, you know. Go, you know, and not leaving strike one that's this far outside and just being okay with it being strike one.
Yeah.
That's the conversations, is like, you know, is being more more willing to use him in spots that maybe aren't with bases loaded. But if you know, you know. So we're having conversations around that topic pretty regularly, trying to get that thing to swing the other direction.
For instance, Ranger missed one yesterday.
That was not a great one. And he knows that too.
Are pitchers even allowed? I mean, some teams just
bang. Every once in a while, a pitcher in frustration, or if they think maybe somebody's has, they'll rip one, and that happens. But yeah, that one was far, pretty far outside.
Like instantly, I was like, "Hey, guy, what's going on?"
That one was pretty far outside.
Go for it.
I was just gonna ask you about Craig Breslow. He had a quote that he said, "You guys are feeling each other out, getting to know each other. Obviously, you know who each other are, but I'm sure in a more intimate sense. How's that been from your perspective? You know the players probably maybe better than you do Craig in some sense.
Talking about Craig and I?
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's been good. He's obviously. We know each other. It's been the last few years as me working on the Myers, but just not a lot of day-to-day interaction.
Yeah.
So now I've been here a month, and he's very present, and we get to have multiple conversations a day before the game, after the day, and that's come along nicely. The more you're around somebody, and the more you get to talk to them and see how they view things, and they get to see how you view things, and you kind of take your two thought processes and put them together. In addition to our staff, that's really good. So. That's come along well as far as he and I's working relationship.
For instance, like on the Marcelo Meyer decision to play him at short, play him at short, how close do you guys, how many discussions do you have to have with management about what the lineup is on a day-in, day-out basis?
Lineup-wise, none. None. As far as Marcelo playing short, yeah, we had a lot of conversations around that. And that wasn't just Brez and I. That was Flo, who's works with our infielders on a daily basis, myself, Brez, Eddie Romero. Like, we all talked about how we're going to handle that, all the way down to knowing, like, we have to wait and see, like, what's going on with Trevor Story. Like, do you want to mess with this young kid and move him to second, and then 2 weeks later move all the ways of the different things and how it affects people, and being very strategic about what we're going to do that. And then once we realized that was going to be a long-term thing, we're going to move the kid over there. We got him the work he needed. But as far as day-to-day, here's who's playing tomorrow. Like, I get with Flo and we talk about that at the end of the day, and we look at it, and I make a lineup and send it out. Like, yeah. And base that on what I'm seeing, what I think's good matchups for the pitcher we're going to face the next day, who do I think's playing well and I want to keep in there. And sometimes Brez is in there and has thoughts or whatever, but for the most part, holistically, that I've said this before, pen to paper, like, at the end is my decision.
With Roman out, Jaren Duran's more of an everyday player now, and it feels like there's maybe a correlation to his uptick in his hitting. Do you see it that way? Just the fact that he's getting to play in the field more, and that maybe that's a reason why he's hitting the ball a little bit better, or is it something else?
I don't necessarily think it's because the field. I think maybe there's something to it. He's in there every day, and it's in the same spot in the lineup. That could be. It could be that. He's finding a little bit of a rhythm, and he's starting to square the ball up. There was periods there in my first couple weeks where, like, he wasn't getting results and he was hitting balls hard. That can start to grind on you mentally when you feel like you're doing everything right and you're not getting the results. He's getting some results now, so it could just be that, as an athlete, when you start to feel positive things happen, it starts to stack. But certainly, like, maybe just leading off every day and the trust of being there what I know about Jaren is when Jaren's good and Jaren is himself, he helps us score runs. Mm-hmm. Any guy leading off, if he's struggling, it's going to, you're not going to score. But when he is right and what he's capable of doing as a leadoff hitter, hit the ball out of the ballpark, hit it in the gap for a triple, he helps us win. So he's starting to swing the bat better, and it's probably no coincidence that we're scoring a little bit more too.
Chad, it's been kind of interesting watching the way you put the lineup together, and that you are definitely someone who it seems like believes in having a merit-based lineup. If somebody gets in there and you give them a shot and they play well, they seem to end up having more playing time. And by the same token, if somebody goes in there, you give them a shot, sometimes they'll go back on the bench. Like, yeah. How is that philosophy affected how you put the card together every day?
Well, sometimes it's, you see a guy maybe goes in there and does well and he's not. Some of it's based on, like, who you're facing, yeah. And you take a look at an opposing pitcher, and there's lefties in the league that are more vulnerable to right-handed hitters, and it makes sense to stack right-handed hitters, and get as many difficult matchups for that pitcher in there as possible. And some of your right-handed hitters are better at hitting lefties. So that's part of it. And then the next day there's a righty and the lineup switches. Well, it's because there's a righty on the mound, and you're looking at all the information about your own players, what this guy's we're facing is good at or not. And then in other senses, it's when I got here, like we were struggling offensively. So I was doing different things to try to spark the offense and also taking my own. I had just gotten here, take my own mental notes of what I'm seeing. What do I think a quality at bat looks like? And how do I get as many of those in the lineup as I can? Quality at bat score runs, you know, the more, and quality at bat can be, you made an out and you saw seven pitches and drove the pitch count up. Like that can be a quality at bat. So I'm watching these things and trying to figure out like, how do I get to a place where I feel like that's the best lineup on a given day? And I think you guys have seen like, and it's, you know, doesn't mean it sticks, but like a lot of it was, how do I get Massa and Gasper both in the lineup?
That's
been hard. He's going to have to catch, you know, I want him to go out there and catch. And Izzy has now taken a jump forward since his at-bats in Kansas City. So, like, yeah, there are things that you see, and you're seeing trends, and you want to run with those things when you see them and try to keep as many quality at-bats in your can. There's no secret that we needed to score more, so we're trying to do that.
Izzy said after the game, he came here to hit pull-side home runs, and he's had more of that. That must make the driveline guys so happy, right? This is like this is exhibit A of why we're doing this.
He wants to do more damage is probably exactly what he's trying to say. Is like Izzy's been around the game for a long time. He knows he's got a gold glove. He knows he's probably got a role to fill anywhere, right? He also knows that role in a lot of cases likely is, you know, as a utility player that doesn't play a lot. Like when I first got here, he wasn't playing much, you know. I think in his mind it was, at his age, if I want to stick around for a while and maybe I can grab some more playing time, whether it's here or, you know, next 2 years down the road, if it's somewhere else, that if he can showcase that he can do some damage. And I give him so many props for jumping in on something to say, I know who I am as a player. I know I can help, but I want to do more, you know? And that's why he's jumping in on like, I have more capability in my bat and I'm going to try to explore those things and not be afraid of that. I give him all the credit in the world for that. And he's earned the right to get some starts right now.
Chad, I'm sorry. Am I wrong to roll my eyes every time I hear driveline and the over?
That's my fault. I brought it up.
No, it's just that it just seems like you're taking something and overanalyzing it to the point where it doesn't get in their heads. Like if you're like a batter and you've been raised one way and you've been hitting dongs your entire life, and then somebody tries to come in and use analytics to change the way you hit, isn't that a negative effect on most players?
It can be. That's why I've said before about driveline or driveline, even if you use that word, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. If you don't know exactly what it is, it's just becomes driveline. And everybody uses this punchline word, it's driveline. And you don't know, like, driveline, you know, the hitting philosophy encompasses a lot of things, right? Swing decisions is what we call them. Or for us, swing at strikes, take balls.
Yeah, right.
Would we all agree that that's a very important thing?
Sure, yes.
Good, right. Yes.
That's a good thing. Hitting the ball hard or exit velocity, hit the ball hard. Yeah. Is that an important thing?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Right.
Ball flight.
Now you're talking my language.
Ball flight, which is not yank it in the air at 900 feet in the air. It's like hit the ball above the infield.
Yeah.
Because that's where extra base hits are. Is that an important thing?
Sure.
This is what it is. Now, who are you as a player, right? Well, ex-player, he is really good at A, B, and C, but his swing decisions are poor.
Yeah.
They're going to focus on, like, let's make better swing decisions.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. It's not everybody go into the batting cage and open your front shoulder and pull it in the air. That's what I think people's view of it is. That's not the case.
It reminds me of Little League when the dad who unasked goes up and grabs your shoulder and pulls it sideways.
And that's not what it is. Like, Jaren Duran, for example, like right now Jaren Duran is on a heat. We've talked about Jaren Duran just a second ago. He's on a heater. He's swinging the bat better. Like Jaren, when he swings at balls, he swings a lot. When he swings at balls, he's not good. When he takes them, he starts swinging the bat well. He's brought his chase outside the zone down about 10% in this period of time, and he's hitting better.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's not hit it over the monster straight down the line, and that's what people think it is. It's not the case. It's this is our pillars, and this is how we view good hitters.
Yeah.
Where do our hitters lie in each one of those things, and how can we make them better in that one or that one or that one, and make sure, hey, you're really good at that. Keep doing that.
And half of it's like being just a good therapist, right?
That's it. That's always been a part of hitting.
Yeah.
You got to be a good therapist.
You know, one of my favorite stories.
It's the game of failure.
It is. And I remember we were talking to David Ortiz one time, and he was telling about this one time he was going through a slump, And Terry Francona is just kind of standing and watching him at batting practice. And Ortiz is just, you know, he just doesn't have it. And he goes, you know, Terry, what can I do? Like, what's wrong? Like, can you help me? And he goes, you're David freaking Ortiz. I can't tell you how to hit a baseball. And at that moment on, he went on a tear.
Yeah.
And it was just, he just needed to hear,
right,
you're one of the greatest hitters that this league has.
Right.
And he said that, boom, instantly it turned him around. And right, it's just that weird thing that someone like in your position, it's not just the X's, it's not just the you know, the stats and putting right together the lineup cards. It's literally having to be a therapist at all times.
You're not wrong about that. Like sometimes it literally is just something you say to somebody,
yeah,
that reminds them, you know, because you can, it's, you know, there's more failure involved in baseball than any other sport. Mm-hmm. It's like you go to the field every day to fail. Mm-hmm. That's what the sport is.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just saying something like that to remind somebody as they are struggling and they forget how good they are, which is easy to do when you go through a stretch of failure, and say something like that and they remind them, man, I'm pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
And it can be. I've seen that too, where it's like one little comment and the guy goes out and gets three hits that night. It's a mind-boggling game.
Well, let's hope the failure at home stops tonight.
On that.
Let's see if maybe this
Ed's
team
taking
can
his tarp off.
Oh, yeah. That would be
I'll be
nice.
In the right field. Check that out in the third inning.
You will not be able to miss him. Well, Chad, thanks for coming in, man. It's great to meet you the first time, and hopefully things get turned around, because as I said, you know, you have guys on this team who don't even know what Fenway is like when your team is winning.
I know.
And just to be able to tell them and show them, it's the greatest place on earth. When this team is winning, Fenway Park is one of the greatest places on earth to be. And just for them to, you know, see that would be something else.
We feel the same. But they are going to work, and we're going to work, and we feel the same. That's what we're fighting for.
Awesome. All right. Well, Chad, thank you so much for coming in. And good luck tonight and for the rest of the season until we talk to you next. Chad Tracy, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. We'll be right back. It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich Ken, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. Chad was great. Chad
Excellent.
Tracy just joined us. He's going to be, you root for the guy, and, you know, hopefully they can turn things around, because if they do, I think he seems like a sincere enough guy and honest enough that, you know, he would be a decent interview.
So I got to tell you, when we asked him about the lineup, I asked him about it a few weeks ago. I think you asked him about it, Ken. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you control who's on the lineup card?
And what was his response?
Well, he said, pen to paper, it's me, but there's a lot of in-betweens there, you know?
If Breslow's in the office, he might.
Right.
But I thought he was very definitive in, no, that's my my job.
That's all he's got, you know, that and the bullpen man.
Right, right, which I find a little bit interesting. I just kind of feel like there's a puppet master kind of pulling all the strings, but
yeah.
When it comes to the lineup, and when we used to ask Alex Cora the same thing, he like looked at you like, you're not seriously asking that question. So it's like managers obviously take that part of their job very serious and do not want to outsource that.
And they have not said, you're not the interim manager. I mean, they're kind of dangling him out there. They're going to make him earn this. I mean, they certainly, Breslow has not given him a voice of vote of confidence.
Can you give me a hit? Because I'm trying to think of historically – when a manager gets jettisoned and they don't hire a new one and you have an interim, like how long are they usually interim managers before they either A, hire someone or just name them the manager?
I think you probably go the whole year like this.
You go the whole year.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of an instance where someone has been an interim manager for almost an entire season, because that's what we're looking at
right. With
Chad Tracy.
No,
it just seems weird.
Yep. I think Ron Ranicki was during the COVID year, but that was different, you know, because Cora got fired and scandal. But
the thing that's weird is it was kind of, I was led to believe that when you, the fact that you weren't giving him the title, that you could still maybe fire him and bring another guy in
right
to finish the season off.
Yeah.
I can't imagine them doing, I think they're going to love the one they're with until the very end and then to make their decision.
It is kind of funny how, you know, at the same time, you know, when Philly got rid of their manager, and Don Mattingly he's turned that team around. Like, they've been excellent under him.
Yep.
But, I mean, then again, they also had a ton of talent.
They have Schwarber.
They have Schwarber, which obviously
Wouldn't you love to ask Chad Tracy, don't you want a big bat? Don't you want that guy in the middle of the lineup? Like, obviously he would say yes, but like he's probably screaming, I got to play Mickey Gasper. Like, this is what I'm dealing with here. I got to find a way to get Gasper in the lineup.
By the way, okay, let me just play this real quick because, and we'll get to the Vrabel stuff here. But so Chad Tracy, Stiz, can you pull up Chad's post game yesterday? Obviously, this has been infuriating, especially when the team started hitting a little bit, to not be able to pull off that win last night. I want you to hear the difference between two different people in the locker room. Here is Chad Tracy afterwards being asked about the loss.
How tough is this guy, just the way it's gone the last, to come back close the last 3 days?
Tough.
Okay, so there's that. And then there's Jaren Duran. And Jaren Duran is feeling himself a little bit because obviously he's been playing. And he, as you should, you know what? Hey, you continue to play the way that you are. You can talk like this. But here's Jaren Duran after the game.
One of these times we're gonna put together what we do in the ninth the whole game, and we're gonna go on a run, and it's gonna be sick. So,
Captain Kickass here.
It sounds. What is this? Like a little Kyme Bloom, and it's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be the
greatest. That's a great.
That's kind of what it is.
By the way, don't be saying we're gonna do what we do in the ninth, because you don't quite finish in the ninth. Like, you get close, but you don't win.
Well, that's again. I said this a couple weeks ago. They are frustratingly watchable. They are in every
now
game.
Now they are.
But they've been like this. They lose how many one run games that they bring the tying run to the plate in the ninth. This is the third time in four games, and they never get the big hit.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep you dangling there until the ninth.
What is this? I mean, this team finds so many different ways to lose.
Yeah, they just have
game.
No margin for error. I mean, nope. Just the talent level is just not there. And they're missing Crochet and Roman. Those are two of their best players in their defense. I mean, which that's part of the reason I think they want him back out there. But that gets into your questions, Rich, which were good ones, about Roman's health and what's going on. And
yeah.
But he's not going to play until the second half now. Would it surprise you if they shut him down until after the All-Star?
No, because he's got to obviously – because I think this might be one of the first times that he kind of talked a little more in detail about having to send him down and spend some time trying to get – and of course, you have to at this point. But that is – you're definitely looking to potentially after – think after the All-Star break?
I mean, it could. I mean, at best, he comes back late June and gets a few weeks in, you know, and then shuts it down and comes back. And
do we want him back? Do we?
Oh, yeah.
Don't rush it. I want him back, but don't rush it.
That's
we want to rush him back? I should have asked the question better.
Well, Breslin does, I think, because his job's on the line. But but as a fan, I just want him back because he's worth watching. You know, that's the one guy you want to tune into every night.
You got
to
come back just healthy. Just please come back healthy, because I feel like what he's dealing with and what he's got to do for his job every day, I could see that not being fun.
So you're buying into a
little bit.
You have
being a little soft.
Yeah, Tatum, you were all over Tatum for missing Game 7. Yep, calf, softish.
Yep, but
now, it's Roman. It's fine. It's hand.
It's different. You know, a 90-mile-an-hour pitch or 100-mile-an-hour pitch that you got to, you know, put a wooden bat to, the vibration that goes through the forearms.
Forearms.
I mean, that can't be easy.
What happened to Ted Johnson? What happened to
soft
Phil?
I think that Ted would rather have a 30% Roman Anthony than 100% anyone else who's going to be playing his position right now.
It's going to be sick.
I just don't want a setback. That's all.
No, you're right.
I don't think this is the kind of injury. Did I ask him? Because I think one of the questions I was going to ask him is, if he plays on it, will it injure it even more? And I guess it's not, from what I've read. This is not one of those injuries that does that. Jeez, I forgot to ask.
You didn't? No, you did. He basically said it's a pain tolerance.
I think he said, which was great.
Oh, by the way, he was talking about Rangers ABS challenge.
Oh, horrible.
It was the worst thing I've ever seen. Out of all the challenges I've ever seen, how far outside was that pitch?
Well, again, this is the ABS system. Just do it or don't. Don't give these pitchers the ability to challenge a random pitch in the third. That's one of two that you get for the game. That is so stupid.
I got to think it's almost, but there's got to be some sort of system, almost like playing cards. Like you don't split certain numbers. You don't. It's got to be like, in certain cases, you never ever challenge a pitch.
Right.
And in that case, when it was a 2-2 pitch in the second inning, like, what are we doing?
You know what? There's not enough data. They'll eventually have enough data that they'll be able to make those kinds of...
Like, there's a card. Like, literally, here is, like, the bottom 20% of times that you should challenge a pitch.
Yep.
And then here's the top 20% where you can feel confident
But they have to do it in... No offense,
Ted. Wait a second.
Most athletes are not smart. Not terribly smart.
How dare you?
So you're putting
Ted's like, no offense.
You're putting them in an emotional situation where they can't consult a card. They have to in the moment say, no, that wasn't a strike. It's setting them up to fail. You're making these guys look dumber than they
are. But every athlete thinks that they did awesome. Like, that's the thing, is that if you're the pitcher and you're challenging, it's because you think everything you're doing is awesome. And in that case, it was so, so egregiously bad.
So the Red Sox are dead last in success rate?
Dead last.
But are they, where do they rank as far as numbers of challenges?
So I'll actually tell you. Because
at the beginning of the season, they were challenging everything.
Yeah, everything, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
another snake bit.
Dude, chill out, man. I mean, and now I feel like they've really pulled back and haven't been challenging as much.
Except yesterday. They got them in early, and they were done.
Gotcha.
Okay, so the Red Sox are... they are right now, they're at the bottom. It's 48% most successful overturns. And the amount that they have challenged 33 times, which is very low. Because if you look at the Marlins have challenged 101 times.
What's their success rate? Does it say?
58. Matter of fact, they're one of the better ones. There's one team, I think it's so the Cubs are 70%.
Ooh,
so they're killing it. By the way, amazing.
They're nerds.
Bregman.
By the way.
That's the Bregman effect.
How awesome is it that we are learning just how awful these umps have been this entire time?
Well, that's true.
Like, I mean, just think of the amount of games that we have gone on the air and bitched that was a strike. How dare they do that? And you know what? We were right.
Well,
because the majority of these calls were wrong. I mean, the Red Sox are the only ones. I mean, these challenges, if you look, I think it's something crazy like 68%. Like, if you like do the entire total, it's like in the 60s, the amount of calls that were wrong total out of all the calls that have been out there. That means that the umps were more wrong than they were right.
Oh, yeah.
So every time we bitched about, like, that's not the right call, that's not it, we were right the entire time.
Validated. We've been validated.
Screw you, Country Joe West. Go suck it and make another country album that stinks. All right. We got to talk about Vrabel, and we will do that next because it's good.